Built Not Born, episode 137. Hey everyone, it's Joe Ciccarone. Thanks so much for joining us. Today's guest is Kate Volman. Kate Volman is the CEO of Floyd Consulting and the author of Do What You Love, A Guide to Living Your Creative Life Without Leaving Your Job. Kate is a sought-after speaker. She has worked with brands such as GoDaddy, Entrepreneur.com, and Startup Nation. Today, Kate and I discuss why everyone has creative potential hiding out inside of them, how each person can be an artist in their own unique way, the benefits of finding a creative outlet regardless of who you are, what you do, what phase you are in life, and how to find time and the courage we need to live our best creative life. Kate's book, Do What You Love, is an amazing read. It's short to the point. It just shows how a creative endeavor, everything from podcasting to a YouTube channel to writing to what have you, when you take time to be creative, how your best life can come into play. Was so excited to get Kate on the show. A big thank you to my wife who found this book and said I should read it and reach out to the author. Kate was gracious enough to come on the show. So Kate, if you're listening, I appreciate you. If you like what you hear, hit that follow button or share this episode with a friend. We have a bunch of cool interviews like this one to come. Enjoy my conversation with CEO and the author of Do What You Love, Kate Volman. And remember, life is built, not born. Kate Volman, welcome to the show.
Oh my gosh, Joe, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Kate, for our listeners who may not be familiar with you and your work, who are you and what do you do?
I am a lot of things. Like everyone, I play lots of different roles, but I am the CEO of Floyd Coaching. So I get to lead a team of people who believe that an organization can only be the best version of themselves to the extent that their people are becoming better versions of themselves. And so I get to do that. And I'm also like you, I'm a podcaster, I'm an author, I am a fitness enthusiast. I love health and fitness. And I also have a local show here in my community, West Palm Beach. I have a big passion for entrepreneurship and helping small businesses, which has kind of been my background my whole career.
I want to get into all of that, but especially the reason I reached out to you in my first sight of your work is this book, Do What You Love, A Guide to Living Your Creative Life Without Leaving Your Job. Read this. My wife actually found this and said, I think you should read this and love it. Love to discuss the book. I love to discuss what you're doing now. Before we do that, I want to start back all the way from the beginning. Where'd you grow up?
I was originally from New Jersey. That's where my parents grew up. But my dad got transferred to Boca Raton, Florida when I was very young. So I grew up in South Florida.
Winter's a little different. A little different from Boca in Jersey, right? A little bit.
A little bit.
Oh my gosh. Where like you're eating outside in January in Boca and you're afraid to get your mail in Jersey because it's like 3 degrees. It's so funny. I'm afraid to go outside. How about this? If someone asked the 18-year-old version of you, of Kate Volman, what she wanted to be when she grew up, what do you think the 18-year-old version of you would have said?
Oh my gosh. When I think about that version of me, I wanted to be an MTV
VJ. Oh yeah, the VJ.
Yeah, I wanted to be a VJ. I still remember I made my mom like get out the video, that old school video camera back then and record me doing my audition. I thought I wanted to do something like that. I thought I was going to be in radio or voiceover. I got into that. So I really I still love creating videos and things like that. I don't know, something in media I probably would have said.
When I think back all the way back to MTV, I think of like JJ Jackson and to the VJs, like the OG VJs.
Yes.
I was really little when MTV first came out and they were spinning videos and MTV was really cool back then.
Yeah, that's when they still like, that's when they actually played music videos. Yeah.
I mean, I haven't turned MTV on in about a decade, but I don't know if it's still a station, but back
then. I didn't even know if it's still around.
It was so cool. You would see, instead of listening to your music, you would watch your music, and the videos were awesome. Like I remember Michael Jackson's Thriller. That came out and like, you're just transfixed when Thriller came out. Like, it was just so killer. But how about this? So how did you go from wanting to be in media to inspiring people by writing about creativity? How'd that come about?
Well, that's a transition, as everyone has their story. Life is so interesting, right? And I love, one of my favorite quotes is Steve Jobs, where he says, you can't connect the dots moving forward. You can only connect them moving backward. Sure. And it's so beautiful because when I graduated, I went to school. I thought I was going to be in advertising or marketing in some way. I got my degree in communication, and that's what I thought. So I worked at an advertising agency for a very short amount of time. It was a crazy role. And so I was like, I gotta get out of here. And my second job out of school was at a chamber of commerce. And working at the Boca Raton Chamber of Commerce, that's where I learned so much about entrepreneurship and business and advocacy and philanthropy and networking. I really learned the power of being able to connect with different people and how really our relationships are what drive so much of our lives. I was there for about 8 years. So I learned so much while I was there. And while I was there, I had an opportunity to leverage my own creativity, because what I did while there, I started their professional women's groups. I started their young professional group. I started their little small groups with the CEOs. And I was able to leverage my creativity. Also, I had a lot of experiences, and I talk about some of those in the book, that inspired me to do more and create programs within the community. And so I had people that really supported my creativity. I probably wouldn't have even called it creativity back then, right? Mm-hmm. It was just, I just found something interesting and I tried to get to it. And so I was at the chamber for 8 years. I met the most incredible people. I would not be who I am today had I not had that role. And then I went off to be the marketing director for the City of West Palm Beach Community Redevelopment Agency. And there, I still was able to use my knowledge in marketing and business and advocacy and really help some of the downtowns here in my community. And so that was another great experience. And while I was there, I've always felt very entrepreneurial. In fact, I love that term, intrapreneur. I think a lot of people are intrapreneurs. And so I really felt I was, and I always owned every position that I held. And while I was there, I had all these ideas. I wanted to do a show that featured the businesses downtown. And so fortunately, my leader who I worked with, she was really part of the reason why I took that role. I learned so much from, and she really let me do a lot of really creative things. She let me take the ideas that I had and let me run with them and see if they worked and played around with them. And then while I was there, I just really developed such a love of video and helping businesses. When I left there, I started a marketing company with some friends and did that for a little while. And so throughout my career, I just kind of kept on using my creativity muscle. I just, when I found things, when I was curious about something, I wanted to dig in a little bit deeper. And so I really allowed myself to explore all of these different ideas. And it was interesting because while I was working at the Chamber of Commerce, I met Matthew Kelly, who wrote the book, The Dream Manager.
Yep.
And that book changed my life in so many ways. And one of those ways is the fact that 10, 12 years after I had met him, I stayed connected with him, and now I run his company. Like, I never would have dreamed that this is where I would be. And so all of the work that he does is around helping people become the best version of themselves, which is a message that I believe in. And so now I get to like help lead this team, and we're helping other people discover their dreams and achieve their dreams. And my book, in Matthew's book, he shares that there's 12 areas of dreams. There's physical, material, mental, spiritual, psychological. There's all these different areas. One of them is creativity. And so while I was writing the book, I told Matthew, I said, I feel like my book is the extension of someone who has a creative dream mm-hmm. that they are excited to achieve, and they just haven't really made it a priority in their life. And so I wrote the book because of my passion for being able to, as I grew in my career, I've worked for other people. I've also worked for myself. And all the while, I've always explored my creativity. you know, when social media came about, I jumped on YouTube. I started creating videos. I started a podcast when podcasting wasn't really a thing. Mm-hmm. I just explored my curiosity, and that is creativity. And so I just let myself lean into that. And I really wanted to share that with other people because I feel so blessed that I've had so many creative pursuits throughout my career. And I see so many people stopping themselves from pursuing their creative pursuits because I have a job. I can't do it. I don't have time. All the myths that I share in the book.
So we're going to get to those myths, which I really connected. I love the little books that just pack a punch in like every third page you're circling something like, yes, that. So much to unpack there. So let's talk about creativity. And I think another word that goes with creativity, you said courage, right? We'll get to that in a second. Creativity, one of the big ideas you mentioned in the book, we are all artists if we do the work, right? If we do the work. And I think everyone, almost everyone on the planet, with very few exceptions, has some sort of artist in them. And one, the busyness of life drowns that out, right? It just drowns it out. And they kind of put that to the side, or they ignore it for years or never, ever, ever get to it. And the funny part is you think that you can't be creative because you have a job and you have kids and you're married and you have a dog and you have a house and a mortgage and you coach your baseball team or whatever. And when you find your little creative outlet and find, I'm just talking about personal experience, and you make a little bit of time for it, doesn't overwhelm your life, but you find that little window, you become a better coach, a better dad, a better spouse, a better work. You become everything else enhances because that creative outlet like makes you happier, makes you more aware, makes you more focused, makes you more, just brings other ideas from other parts of your life. It's crazy how when you actually take the time and have the courage to move forward with whatever creative process it is making candles, doing a podcast, writing a blog, doing a book, whatever it is, you become better in the things that you thought you couldn't be creative because you're so busy doing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. That's why it's so important for everyone to believe. I think everybody is an artist. You know, we think that artist means, when someone says artist, what do we typically think of? We think of a painter or someone who draws or a musician.
Yep.
But I always tell people, I'm like, you are the artist of your life. Create something. Like, you get to create whatever it is that you want to create. And I think that's what's fascinating to me about people is that we all have our own creative outlets. Like for me, it's for some people, they look at my creative pursuits and they think it's like a lot of business stuff because I love podcasting and I love doing videos and I love writing and those things. For some people, that's a lot of work. I don't really explore like jujitsu or, you know, cooking or gardening. And those are all forms of creativity because when you look at, especially when you look at a chef or someone in the kitchen, like putting together, I'm like, I'm envious of those people. How do you know what to put in a meal so it's going to be good? Like, that's all creativity. And if we talked about creativity in that way, I think everybody would feel like they have more access to it in their own lives.
What do you think holds people back? I mean, I have some ideas. Like, I think one, not knowing what to be creative in, and two, not knowing what you would do, like what would be my creative outlet, but like the courage to do it. And like Seth Godin, I believe you mentioned Seth in the book. And a quick story, Seth is the reason why I'm podcasting. During COVID, I follow Seth, I've been reading Seth's stuff for years. And then he put online, he goes, while we're all locked in our house during 2020, he goes, I'll teach you how to podcast. And he had a podcasting workshop and we're all in our house. It was like $500. I'm like, I'm in. So people all over the world joined Seth to learn how to podcast. And he had a couple of people helping him. And maybe like in 45 days, he taught you how to podcast online. And I was so scared to do it. I was always scared to podcast and I didn't do it. My excuse was, well, I don't know how to do it. Like that, you have to have a lot of equipment and it's probably really expensive. I have no idea what to do. No one in my family podcasts, none of my friends have a podcast. Then all of a sudden he shows it and I'm like, oh my gosh, the excuses are gone. You need literally a wired microphone and a laptop computer and you can have a podcast. And all the excuses were gone. And then after the class, I actually got re-scared because I had no more excuses. And like, you're like, oh my God, like I knew how to do it. I had the equipment and I'm like, the only things holding me back is my fear. because you're going to get laughed at or no one's going to listen. It's basically no one's going to laugh at you. They're going to ignore you for a while. But even if everyone in the world ignores you, when you get that creativeness out, like I found myself, I was better at my job. I'm in sales. I became a better salesperson and a better leader of the team I lead because my listening skills, which, you know, everyone's always working on them. I know I'm always working on that. Like they got better because I'm just doing interviews and I'm asking questions and that question doesn't work. This one's better. And I'm using some of the questions I use in podcasts when I talk to customers. And like the conversations go to places you never did before. And I'm like, wow, I'm better at my job because I take time to be creative.
I love that, Joe. I love that. So that is a really inspiring story that people need to hear, because what you just talked about, what you just described was what I talk about in the book as the passion loop, mm-hmm. right? Like the passion loop where you have this idea, I want a podcast. And you think about, yeah, I want to do that. But almost immediately you think all those excuses. I don't know how, like I don't have the equipment, all that stuff. And so then you don't do anything, but then a week goes by, a month goes by, and all of a sudden you think about it again. Wow, I should really start that podcast. And it's like this loop that you're stuck in. And the only way to break free from the passion loop is exactly what you did. You took the next right step. So you took the class with Seth. You learned how to do it. Great. Then your next right step is to do the first episode. Then the next one. Now, you had no idea. Can you imagine? You're on episode, what is this?
You'll probably come on around like 140. Yeah.
All right. So, and for those that don't know podcasting, there's millions of podcasts out there, right?
Three and done, five and done.
But I think I heard like the average, maybe seven podcasts and they're done. Why? Because it's this muscle that we have to keep going, because people think, oh, I'm going to put out a couple podcasts and all of a sudden I'm going to be Joe Rogan. No, like you have to put in the work. But what's cool and what I love about what you said is it's not about the outcome. It's not about the outcome of the podcast. What I love is that you leaned into, this is what I'm learning and this is how I've gotten better. Because even if you, let's say you stopped at episode 140, you are a different person. You've learned a lot. You've gained skills. And this was a good investment of your time.
Oh, absolutely. You listen better. Then it's just say you did a blog, take podcasting away. Like you do a blog, you become a better writer. You start noticing things. You start like, wow, my sentences are too long. You become your emails at work become better because if you blog once a week or once a day or whatever, or even once a month, right? Your writing becomes better. You notice things and you start thinking of what am I going to write about this week or this month or today, right? And then you start noticing things that are happening in your life. You're more hyper aware of what's going on. Like, oh, that's a great topic to write on. And then like you become more self-aware and aware. Here's one of the myths, I think. I'm going to go through the myths in order, but it's myth number five. I'll jump to that. First thing I hear when I first started, one, are you going to quit your job? Like if you shoot, I put like three podcasts up. Are you going to quit your job? I'm like, are you insane? I basically put three podcasts up and someone's like, oh, is that what you want to do? Are you going to like leave here and be a podcaster? That would be like someone, you ever see someone like golf? Like they went golfing in the country club with their buddy and they take a picture like great round with my buddy, Johnny. Are you going to quit your job and go to the PGA tour? No, are you insane? Or someone's like taking a picture, they're shooting hoops. Oh, you're going to go join the NBA. Like just because you try something creative that's off the beaten path does not mean you're going to leave your job. Does not mean you lost focus in your job, right? Like it does not mean you're not doing your job at a good level or you're not being a good dad. It's mean like you found time for something that's going to make your life better.
And yes.
Yeah. And let's talk about that. Like there's not enough time. Here's one thing. Here's a Seneca quote you used that I just love. What can happen anytime can happen today, right? So it's never going to slow down. That's until you die. That nothing's going to slow down. Little kids are going to become teenagers. Teenagers are going to get married. Married kids are going to have their own kids and your grandkids are going to be over maybe. Like it's never going to slow down. So like if you want to do something, you have to fit it into your life right here, right now. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think this one's an interesting one because especially in this world where everybody is so busy, there's so much to consume, there's so much to do, there's so much to fit in. But when we think about it, we do find the time and make the time when it's something we really, truly care about. Yep. And so it really just becomes a matter of belief. Like if people believe, if they truly believe that that whatever it is that they say they want to do would make an impact in their life, then we would make time for it, right? Like, absolutely. If someone was going to tell you, if someone were to say, hey, if you start this project today and 2 years from now, it's going to blow up and you're going to be this podcaster, if that was something that you wanted to do, then you would probably invest the time. But we don't have that luxury of knowing the outcome, right? We don't know if what we start is where it's going to lead us to. And so we just have to trust in the process. And that's what I love so much about discovering more about the creative process. In fact, oh my gosh, I love, so the Grammys was a couple days ago, and I saw Taylor Swift's speech, right? She had won her fourth Grammy. She made history, first person ever to win four Grammys in that category. And one of the things that she said, Joe, and I absolutely loved it because I say something very similar in the work. She said something along, I wish that I could say this is like the best moment ever, but I can't, because I feel this way every time I end a song, every time I write a new song. And she goes, the award is the work. The award is the work. And I'm like, oh, that is so good. I keep on texting my friend now when we're having these conversations back and forth about them, like, you know, doing different projects. I'm like, the award is the work. If we can go about life and think the award is the work, then everything becomes better, because we're like, wow, all the things that I am doing are pushing me to become a better version of myself. And the only way to be a better version of ourselves every day is to tap into your curiosity, have that creative courage, and pursue the things that you think are really meaningful.
I love that. The reward is the work. Like, you focus on the process. We control the process, but we don't control the outcome. We could post Correct. Something and one person will listen to it. We can post something and I've had 1,000 people listen to it, right? Like, I remember the very first one, the very first blog. I told Seth this story when he was on the show. The very first blog post I ever wrote, and I wrote it, I hit publish. As soon as I hit publish, I was like scared. I almost took it off the internet. I can't believe I put that on. This is like 10 years ago. Like, it's going to be, everyone's going to laugh. Like, it's embarrassing. And at the end, like, I looked at it and the website shows you how many people like logged on to look at it. And after I looked at it, a few hours later, it said one. And then I told my mom and my wife about like, hey, I have a blog out and I wrote one and check it out. And I sent them the link. The end of the next day, it was two. Right. And I talked to each of them and they both like, oh, yeah, I saw it. It was great. Yeah. Good job. Congrats. Like, only one of them read it. Like, no one's going to read it. But you have to get comfortable of the reward is the process and then refining the process. Yeah. And then the outcome is whatever it is. Right. And as long as you let that go, then you can just let your little project or creativity flow. And that just takes so much pressure off when you just focus on what you can control and let what you can't control, let it be.
Yeah. Yeah. And it makes it more fun, right? That's so much what stoicism is, right? It's like, there's things that we can control and there's things that we can't control. And we have more control than we think. When it comes to time, in the book, I share an activity that people can do, because I think it's really important for us to really be honest with ourselves. Like, if we really look at our day and you think through everything that we're doing, most of us would probably say, and I work with a lot of leaders, and they will always say, like, I probably spend too much time on email. I probably spend too much time on social media or doing things that I really don't bring me a lot of value. And so what can you cut out of your day in order to find 15 minutes, like 15 minutes to do something?
I want to go right there. So I hear a lot, when someone does something creative that's not like work or kids or taking the garbage out, like, you'll hear like, how do you have time for that? How do you have time for that? Like I have three kids. I work and have kids. You don't need 6 hours to be creative. I love the Pomodoro technique you mentioned. First off, everyone wastes time. There are time wasters in everyone's schedule. I know people that say, I don't have time to be creative, but they'll watch 5 series on Netflix they can talk about. They could talk about 5 series in depth. They watch all 5, boom, each night, hours of Netflix. What could you quit? Even not quit. What could you dial back to free up like 20 minutes a day, right? If you free up 20 minutes a day, you could, there's probably nothing creative you can't do that if you free up 20 minutes a day, just 20 minutes a day, and you focus on something and just do the work, you could probably produce something once a week or once a month if you just focus 20 minutes a day. What do you think?
Totally. Absolutely. And, you know, I'm laughing as you're talking because I get the same thing with some of our clients. So they'll talk to me about, oh, well, have you seen this show? I go, oh, funny how you don't have any time yet. You watched all these Netflix shows.
It's crazy.
And, but we justify it, right? The justification is I need to relax and I need to, it's my day. I just want to sit on the couch. But I would argue that if you actually spent that 20 minutes instead of watching a show and did something creative, it would actually boost your energy. You would actually end your day more productively. And I don't even want to say productively because that sounds like we have to get somewhere. You would end your day with more energy and excitement and passion about your life than if you just sit on the couch and watch a Netflix show.
150%. If you say, hey, you can end your day with an hour of watching Ted Lasso's third season or whatever, Breaking Bad, or you could spend a half hour like editing a podcast or running a blog and like getting it ready to ship out the next day. I think I sleep better, more content on the day. I think I'm a better listener. I'm just a better person when you could do that half hour of that creative pursuit than just sitting on the couch. Here's a big question you mentioned in the Not Enough Time chapter. Why do you think people don't feel guilty watching Netflix, but they'll feel guilty like I'm going to take 5 minutes and make candles, or I'm going to make 20, I'm going to spend a half hour and make candles, or maybe they're flower arrangers. They love to arrange flowers. Like they feel guilty doing that. Like that's almost too decadent to do like, oh, I don't have time for that, but I could sit on the couch and watch TV for 90 minutes. Like where's that disconnect at?
Yeah, there. So from my experience in a lot of the work that I've done and the people that I've had an opportunity to work with over the years, and just even conversations with friends, we tend to feel guilty because we put other people's priorities above our own. Mm-hmm. And when we do, and when life happens, like you talked about, we have families and we have responsibilities that we have to do. And so we feel like all of our time needs to be spent doing all of those things. And if we're not doing something that's like supporting other people, if we're not at home and we're not doing the laundry or making the kids' lunches or doing all these things, and we're instead making time for a yoga class or something that we know is going to actually be good for us and give us more energy, but we feel like, oh, I can't do it. And so we make all of these excuses. And I think that when it comes to why we don't feel guilty maybe about sitting on the couch is because that's just the norm. That has become kind of the norm of what people are used to doing. And that's kind of the day. If we normalized creativity, it's something, it's a necessity. We need to feed our creativity. So if we, instead of acting as if it's something that is a nicety in our lives, and instead we looked at it as a priority in our lives, and we also communicated to the people in our lives, I have to do this in order for me to come home to you, whoever you come home to, and be a better spouse, a significant other, mother, brother, father, sister, whatever roles that you play. And so when we look at that and we think, this is why I love when leaders encourage their team members to have creative pursuits, to have those outside projects. We all know that when we are able to feed into those creative pursuits, that we are better people. And so if we really normalize that way of thinking about it, instead of, we hear this all the time where people will say, oh, you just got out of a yoga class. Must be nice.
Yeah.
Must be nice to be able to have time for that. And so we almost like people are demonizing each other for taking time for ourselves. And yeah, that's not how we should be treating other people. We should be like, oh, that's awesome. That is an important part of your day.
It's so true. And back into myth five, a couple of things you mentioned, like where to find time. Like when the average, everybody wastes time, everybody. What can you quit doing? What can you delegate? How do you get your time back? And if everyone on the planet looked at their schedule, there's 20 minutes somewhere that you could trim up. Somewhere. Everyone does something that they shouldn't do. I know, like if I'm wasting time, like I'll go on Instagram to see something, and next thing you know, you're in the rabbit hole. And mine's jujitsu videos and Instagram accounts of Italy and Europe. Like all of a sudden, I'll just see I'll be watching jujitsu move after jujitsu move. Then all of a sudden, I'm in Florence, I'm in Venice. I'm like, whoa, 20 minutes has gone by. I got to stop. But like everyone wastes time. And if you could find that, what do I waste time on? Or what do I do maybe too much? Like maybe I do X too much, and you can back that off 20 minutes and you put that towards something like creative, not even productive, but creative.
Creative,
it's amazing what happens there. How about this? We go to myth six. It has to be perfect. I remember when I first started blogging or podcasting, if you measure yourself to the standard, like if I measured my blog to Seth Godin's or measured my podcast to Tim Ferriss or Joe Rogan, I would go nowhere near the computer ever because they're like a billion times better. A billion, right? And yeah. It's like you can't measure yourself to like, that's like someone who wants to play in a, doesn't play in adult pickup league at the Y because they're not LeBron James. Like you're not measuring yourself. Just go out and play and have fun.
Yeah.
Go out, play and have fun and see what happens. Maybe you have a good game. Maybe you have a bad game, but you can't measure yourself. I'm not LeBron James, so I can't play in the YMCA league. It, to me, it's the same thing. I'm not Joe Rogan, but I could still have a podcast if I'm not as good as Joe Rogan or Tim Ferriss, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's this myth, I have to say, is one that I have gotten so many people seem to resonate with it because there's a lot of I'm sure a lot of your listeners are type A, they're driven, they're very successful people. We sometimes have this perfectionism inside of us and we feel like either, oh, it's already been done, right? Like how many people would say, well, there's already so many podcasts, I can't do a podcast, or, oh, there's already so many books, I shouldn't write a book, but they have a passion for writing a book. And we have to let go of this perfectionism because it really does hold us back from exploring. And I love when I think about who else I look up to. In fact, I just had this conversation with a friend of mine because we were talking about how easy it is to play the comparison game. Like you're comparing your work to someone else's work, but we can't compare our beginning to someone's much further along, to someone's like ending. Like we've got to start where we are and only grow from there. And so we are only competing with who we were yesterday, who we were a week ago. So if we're looking at ourselves in the sense of I'm only competing to make sure that I'm getting better every day, that every time that I show up, I am creating what I can create in the best way possible. And so let's think about it. And I love the writing process because I learned so much about the writing process while writing the book. In fact, mm-hmm. I got really, I nerded out on reading all the books about writing because I was like so fascinated by writers and authors and creators. And so as I was reading all their books, one of the things that always came up was this concept of the horrible first draft. Like when people sit down to write, it's not good. Like no one's sitting down and like the first thing that they were, maybe Stephen King by now, but but that's a lot of reps he's got there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you know, it's like, I mean, think about your first podcast. Like obviously your first podcast compared to your podcast now, 135 or however many episodes later, can't even compare, right? Like you have been able to grow and learn because you've been really intentional about it. So it's the same thing with our own creative projects. We have to realize, hey, we're going to be bad. Like it's going to be bad. You're going to be mediocre. No one wants to be mediocre, but it's part of the creative process to lean into that mediocrity and just know that only by putting out the work and only sitting down and doing the work can you get better. So you have to put out that horrible first draft.
Yep.
Then you go back and you clean it up and you keep cleaning it up and you go back and you go back. And I have to say what's so interesting about authors is, and really artists in general, I would assume, is that I don't think I've met one author that said that they wrote a book, they're finished and they're done and they think it's perfect. Every author I've ever met have said, if I could go back to that book, I would have included this. I would have taken this out. I would have thought I would have changed that. And I find that to be really interesting. And so we can take that and use it in our own lives, right? We take every experience we've had and it helps us become who we are today.
That's so true. You have to lose your ego of being bad. I remember Seth Godin was saying that, we were mentioning something about put the first couple blogs out. They're so bad. I said something like that. And he's like, he goes, Billy Joel. He goes, you ever hear of Billy Joel's demo tape? He goes, you could somehow find Billy Joel's demo tape when he very first started out. He goes, it kind of sounded like Billy Joel, but it wasn't very good. Like,
it's wow.
It just wasn't good. But like, you have to go there to get to Piano Man.
Yep.
You have to go there to go to Scenes from Italian Restaurant. Like you got to start that crappy first draft to put something on paper or something, you know, record something in the queue to get to 78 iterations later. We're like, whoa, that's freaking amazing work. Like that is something that's time, like something that may be timeless. That's pretty cool. How about this myth number 7, inspiration will strike If you show up and do the work, it'll strike every time you sit down and do the work. Like if you wait for inspiration to strike you, you'll never do the work. It'll strike you like twice a year. But if you just sit down and do the work and you write that crappy first 100 words, crappy first 500 words, the 501st word is like, whoa, that's where the magic starts, right? And then you get rid of all the nonsense that you just had to clear your brain out. And then all of a sudden that good first sentence comes out and then you're off to the races, right?
Yeah. And what I think is so cool too, and you were talking a little bit earlier where you were saying if you could decide whether it's sitting down watching Netflix or doing the work, putting it towards your creative pursuit. And most people are going to choose to sit and watch Netflix, right? Because you're tired. That's the day. You had a whole day. But if you actually sit down, even when you don't feel like it, and you started writing or you started that podcast episode or editing, whatever it is that you want to do, what's always interesting, and this happens to me, this happens to my creator friends that I talk to, even when you don't feel like it, all of a sudden you feel like you just want to go to bed, you're tired, and you start working on it, and all of a sudden, like a half an hour has passed, and you have energy, and you're playing music, and you're like doing the thing, because that is what caused the inspiration. Doing the work is what inspired you to keep going, starting to do the work. I think I shared this in the book. I love this story because in Stephen King's book on writing, which so funny because I love his book on writing. I don't read his other work because I don't like scary movies.
Same.
But he's obviously a great author. So but he talks about the muse and this whole idea of the muse, which I love the concept of we have to have this muse and artists have a muse. And he describes it because when I think about a muse, I think like, oh, beautiful angel coming down from heavens and like, you know, flowy wings. Meanwhile, Stephen King talks about the muse as the muse. He said, the muse is a basement kind of guy. He lives in the basement and you have to stoop down to his level. You got to walk down to the basement. And even when you walk down to the basement, he's over there ignoring you and he's smoking his cigar and you got to sit down and you got to start writing. But once you start writing, he kind of looks over and he's like, okay, he's paying attention. And then he gives you the inspiration. So the muse finds you when you're working. Yeah. And that's what I love so much is that when we have that idea of, okay, I might not be inspired now, but this is why I love the Pomodoro technique. If you just gave yourself, even if you just said, hey, for 10 minutes, I'm going to sit and write. You can write for that 10 minutes and then see what happens. Maybe 10 minutes is enough and you really were tired and you want to go to bed. But maybe after 10 minutes, you're like, wow, I'm on a roll. I'm not going to stop now. I'm going to keep going. Yep. So that's what I love about this idea that inspiration doesn't strike, but you can gain that inspiration and momentum simply by starting.
Steve Pressfield tells a great story in his book. Did you ever read The Daily Pressfield?
That his new book?
His new book. I'll send that to you as a little thank you. And he tells a story in his book, Where Do You Find Inspiration? He goes, I only write when I'm inspired. And lucky for me, inspiration strikes every 9 a.m. when I sit down at the keyboard.
Right? I love it.
Yeah. Like it's just, you got to sit down. You got it until you do the work, the inspiration will not strike. Right.
That's so good. The War of Art is definitely one of my very favorite books. It's so always around with me because he is someone who that book inspires me to get started. Right? Like you're like, you got to do the work.
Yeah. I think Ryan Holiday says, are you familiar with Ryan Holiday?
I love Ryan Holiday.
And he mentions on his podcast all the time, before he starts any book, he reads The War of Art. Like he'll reread The War of Art just to reset the mindset about, you know, it's going to be hard. You know, you're going to want to quit in the middle. You're going to know you're not going to be inspired. And just the whole process already happened again. Just remind himself of what that process looks like to create the book. It's so cool. How about this? All right. Let's just say somebody's like, I want to be creative. I can find 20 minutes in the day, but I get this. This is the two big questions. What would I be creative on? I have no idea what I would do, right? I would love to be creative. I have no idea what to do. And here's a couple big questions that you put in the book. How about this? What do you love to do that you stopped making time for? And then how was your life better when you were doing that? That's such a powerful question. Where'd you come up with that question at?
I was asking people that question when I was having conversations with people because I had some friends of mine that would reach out to me when they saw that I was working on all these creative projects. They were like, How did you do all this stuff? Like your podcast, and then you do these videos, and that, like, they just were noticing that I was doing a lot of different things in the community and online. And they would say, I don't even know what I would want to pursue. Like, I don't even know what I'm passionate about. And it was so interesting because I used to run this program for women, and it was a little small group mastermind. And I would get that question quite a bit. And I was always so surprised because I've always had so many passions that I was like, oh no, I didn't realize this was a problem for people. I would ask them that because I was trying to help them uncover their creativity, because as we started this conversation, everyone is creative. And so asking them that question, it brought them back to that more simple time in life, like when they were kids and they loved creating stories, or they loved drawing or painting, or they used to take a pottery class, or they were really big into gymnastics and they dabbled in yoga a little bit. They thought about maybe becoming an instructor, but then they didn't because, well, I'm not going to leave my job to be an instructor. I was like, you don't need to leave your job to go get certified as a yoga teacher. Like, if you love it that much, why not just get certified and see what happens? Maybe you'll go teach one day and maybe you never will, but you'll have learned so much about a practice that you really appreciate. Yep. So that's really why I came up with that question, because I was asking a lot of people that I knew that question to help them uncover some of their creative pursuits.
When you do something creative, initially, your mindset, and it's a common mindset to say, like, A, are you getting paid for it? And two, are you going to leave your job? Like, you have like 10 blog posts out, you have one book out, or you have 10 podcast episodes out, and you're like, are you getting paid for that? Are you getting paid for that? Or like, how much money are you making? Or are you going to leave your job? There's a Jim Rohn quote, it's not what you get, it's who you become.
Yes.
If you could do something that would make you more self-aware, more empathetic, a better listener, a better conversationalist, and just more in tune to other people, is that worth pursuing that? And I think it is. And if you can make some money along the way, great, eventually, but that's not the purpose. You know what I mean? Like, you're not trying to be.
Yeah. Well, I talk about, a lot of people asked me when I was writing the book, they said, oh, that's so cool, you're teaching people how to turn their passion into a business. I was like, oh no, that's not the book at all. I said, but there's a lot of really wonderful books about that. And it's actually a beautiful thing. If you want to turn your passion into a business, look at the world. So many people have done it, right?
There's
so many resources that allow us to do that. You can make something, put it up on Shopify. There's so many things that we can do to turn our passion into a business. But the book really is not for that. Like, the book is for, hey, you just want to tap into your creativity. Now, if that turned into potentially a business, great. But I would think that even people that have their passion as a business, they still have a creative pursuit that they do that is not, they're not making money. Like, the second that we earn money for one of our creative pursuits, the dynamic changes a little bit, sure, right? Like, I've heard this with everyone. They start a podcast. At first, it was just really, really fun. And then all of a sudden, they're getting sponsors, or like even some of these influencers online. It's like, you start getting sponsors, you start getting money. Well, now you have to be thinking through, oh, now someone's paying me. Now I have to really be concerned about how many people are viewing it. Does this convert? Like, it's a different conversation and it's a different feeling. Mm-hmm. It's not good or bad. It's something to think about. So this is why I feel, especially in the beginning, if you do have a passion to start something, many of us, we don't go into it with this. We let perfectionism stop us because we're automatically thinking, I have to create this podcast that's going to be my business. No, you don't. If you love talking about cupcakes and baking and you want to have a podcast about that, then great. And then just start and see what happens. And down the line, only, this is why I love what you shared, because you learned so much about the show. You learned so much about being a better interviewer and the way that you're viewing your podcast and what could potentially come from your podcast is very different than when you started it. But you never would have come up with those ideas or decisions had you not started.
That kind of brings us to myth one, the power of starting. Having the courage to take that first step is so big. That first step is so big. To have the courage to say, I'm going to do this, to make the decision to actually take that first step and hit that publish button for the first time, or put that cake online that you made for the first time, do that Instagram account and post the first cake that you baked. Like that takes such, not physical courage, but mental courage, right? To do that, to take the step out, to either A, be ignored, B, to be laughed at, or maybe to connect with someone that you had no idea who you would connect with if you never took that first step.
And I love that you just said that about the connection, because that's what's really cool too when you get into something new and different, is that you recognize that there are so many pockets of communities that you never knew existed, never. Right?
Are like crazy.
If you like podcasters crazy. Alone, they have its own world and you speak podcast language. Yeah. And it's really cool to hear what some people have done. It's the same thing with writers. Like I've been part of some writing communities and I was like, oh my gosh, this is like a whole community of people, and there's a ton of resources. Same thing in like health and fitness and whatever it is that you're in, baking and in all of this, in everything that is out there in the community. There are communities for everything. You want to play chess, you want to learn music and things. There's just so many communities of people that like are so passionate about this one thing. And so get into those communities and find people that are like you, that, you know, when you find a community, you're like, I found my people.
Yeah.
Like they get me, they understand me. And I talk about that in the book. I call them creative friends. We need to have creative friends.
Oh, absolutely.
And our creative friends are the people that are doing the work. They are allowing themselves to go through the creative process so they know and understand all those seven myths. They've felt them or they're feeling them, and only they can really understand what you're going through to help you along the way.
Absolutely. Like getting back, you mentioned jujitsu in the book. And if you see behind me, you see my mat. I've been training jujitsu for a while. And
that's so cool, by the way. I've had some friends that do it and I'm always so fascinated by it.
But like you go and you find your crowd and you don't know where it leads, where you go to jujitsu, right? And you're never the greatest in the world. Like I'm not the greatest in the studio I go to, and let alone like in the world. So to think like, oh, if you're not the best, if you're not Joe Rogan or Gordon Ryan, you can't train. You go train, but then you meet other people that are like-minded, but then it makes your life better in other ways. Like you just said, that you don't even realize as possible when you first started. Next thing you know, you're asking someone who's in shape, who's 10 years older than you, like, what's your diet look like? And they go, hey, did you ever try this? So I eat this. I'm like, well, I never had that fruit before. I've never drank watermelon juice. And then all of a sudden you try it. That's phenomenal. And then your diet changes. Then you see how they dress. You're like, oh, that's cool. And you're wearing cooler gear. You're dressing. Then all of a sudden they're reading books that you authors you never heard before. And you have a book. And then that brings your mind somewhere else. Like you follow them through different creative ways, what they read, what they think, where they travel, where they go. And it's really cool. It makes other parts of your life better because you had the courage to follow one of your creative pursuits and you have no idea which direction it takes other aspects of your life.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Perfect. That's like the best example. I love that so much. It's like when I have found my community, because I'm really big into health and fitness too. So I go down the rabbit hole of like learning all about intermittent fasting and the sauna and the cold plunges. And I'm like, this is like a whole world that I had no idea existed.
Because you follow that one passion. Next thing you know, like, you learn how to stretch your body different. Like we have a yoga instructor at our school who's just awesome. And like he shows us stretches. Like there's no way I would be as flexible if I didn't learn like the stretches he did from jujitsu. Like I didn't go to jujitsu to be flexible, but after like seeing what they do and seeing people that are elite that train jujitsu that do yoga, then all of a sudden like you're more flexible, you don't get hurt as much. Then you see these people with these healthy diets and then it just other parts of your life go to better places because you pursued one creative pursuit and you have no idea where that road's going, but it's a very positive direction it takes your life.
Yeah. Yeah. That happened to me with Pilates. I had done yoga, but I had done Pilates maybe years ago, but somehow I got into it and I started taking these classes online. Mm-hmm. And Joe, I was like, I'm a pretty fit person. I'm going to be able to rock this Pilates thing. It was so much harder than I thought it was going to be. And so I'm like watching this girl and she's this beautiful woman, former dancer. And she's just like, she just looks like a beautiful angel on the mat. And I'm like, dying. But after a couple months of me consistently doing it, I've been doing it like every day, at least 20 minutes a day. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can actually do these poses that I thought that's not even possible. She can only do it because she's a dancer. No, I had to put in the work, and I don't look pretty. I would never want anyone videotaping me while I did it, but I definitely, it's become such a passion of mine. In fact, I was thinking the other day about potentially getting certified just because I want to learn more about the practice.
Yeah, so good. You mentioned, just circling back, I wrote a note down from like 20 minutes ago, writing books. What are your maybe two or three favorite writing books? There's so many great ones.
Oh, books on writing?
Yeah, yeah. What caught your attention?
So Bird by Bird by Anne Lamott.
That's it. That's mine. Done.
Perfect. Right?
Greatest ever. So good. She is such a great writer. Every chapter, you can just highlight the whole chapter. Like, it's so good.
I know. You know, another one you might like is Several Short Sentences by Verlaine Klinkenberg.
I never heard that one, really.
It's a really good book. One of the things that he shares in that book that I always think about is it's something along the lines of, it's important to know what you're trying to say, but it's crucial to know what you've said. So good. I was like, that's awesome. So I really love that book. And I also love Stephen King's book on writing is definitely one of my favorite books. And then if for those of you that are really interested in more of the writing process, Anne Hanley's book, Everybody Writes, is a phenomenal book just on the writing process. And she gives you a lot of, there's some chapters in there. She actually just there's an expanded version now. Mm-hmm. And she talks about some of the mistakes that a lot of writers make. And so that's an interesting book as well. She's a phenomenal writer.
I heard a lot about Stephen King's book for years, and I probably got it maybe like a year and a half ago. And I was surprised where Anne Lamott, like right off the bat, starts giving you writing, like she gives you writing advice right away, where Stephen King kind of tells you his story. It's almost like a biography of Stephen King.
Yes. In the book.
And I'm reading it. I go, this is more like a biography. I don't know if I'm becoming a better writer. But then as the book goes on, he drops these writing gold inside the biography of how he became a writer. He drops like these best practices, like, whoa, that's incredible. It's so good. Like he kind of like subtly drops. He doesn't say, you do this. He just tells you his life story and how he got to it. And then like he just inside the paragraphs, he just drops these just like creative gold he drops, which is he's just so incredible. How about this? There's a part of the interview we call share your secrets. So our guests get to know you a little bit more as a person. You mind go answering a few fun questions?
Okay, sure. Cool.
How about this? When you need to clear your mind and recharge your body, what do you do?
That's definitely my morning routine. I wake up super early. I wake up between 4:30 and 5 to work out. So after I work out, I do a long walk. I am very fortunate. I live right by the water on the intercoastal here in South Florida. So I take this beautiful walk up by the water, and I used to use that time to, I always felt like I had to be learning and I have to listen to audiobooks or podcasts, but now I use that time to pray and meditate and walk and think. And I really use that time. So that is my morning time that I need to really start my day.
That's awesome. It's common for people that are from Jersey, but then move to Florida, like when it's 65 degrees, you have a coat on or no?
Okay. I definitely have probably like a sweatshirt on. But I will say it was so funny because it was the other day, because this week has been a little chilly, like Florida chilly. It's been like 53 in the morning, which to me is like freezing. So I'm walking, and as I'm walking, and it's like super early, right? It's like five, it's probably around like six. So the sun's not really up yet. And I always see these guys on near the bridge that are fishing. Uh-huh. And so I'm walking, and it was so hilarious because I'm walking up and all of a sudden I hear this man say, she's from Florida, she's from Michigan. And I looked at him and I'm like, what is he talking about? And I look up, I'm in my like sweater and I have my hoodie on and I'm like so cold. And there's this woman running towards me. Thanks. She's wearing bike shorts and a sports bra. And I'm like, what? And so... So I'm walking by and he says, she's from Florida, she's from Michigan. And I look back at him and I go, facts.
It's so funny. Because, like, you know, in Philly, when it's 55 degrees that one day in January, the shorts come out. It's like shorts and like flip-flops and a hoodie. Everyone throws on. But like in Florida, it's 55. Like everyone's
we're breaking
like
out the boots, Joe. We get to wear our boots like a couple times a year.
That's so great. How about this? Most authors are huge readers. What book influenced your life or changed your mind more than any other? Do you have a favorite book?
That is the hardest question because I have so many favorite books. I don't have a favorite.
How about two or three? What comes to
mind? There's a lot of books I love, but I always say, obviously, the book that has changed my life the most is The Dream Manager. Okay. Not only did it change the way that I think about leadership and people and helping people, but it obviously changed my life because of Matthew Kelly himself. He is a remarkable leader, someone who he has written over 30 books by now. I don't even know. That man just writes books. He is an incredible author. So that book made a huge impact in my life, as well as so many of his other books. And so I definitely recommend people checking him out. He's a wonderful author and human. And another one of my favorite books is Big Magic, which
Elizabeth Gilbert.
That book is just crazy. It's amazing. It's such so a phenomenal book. I have a lot of books about creativity that I love, but I'll throw in a leadership book that is one of my favorites that I read a couple years ago is Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink.
Best.
Such a great book. I'm just a huge fan of Jocko and what he does and stands for. And he seems like the most intense person, but it would probably be so fun to hang out with him.
Okay. We had, I had JP Donnell, one of his lead snipers the show a couple months back. And we went over Extreme Ownership and so good. The book is so good. And I was lucky enough to meet him a couple months back. And he just writes in a way, it's so simplified. Like there's no fluff. It's exactly what you need to hear with not an extra word. Like the leadership principles are just amazing. Regarding creativity, did you ever read Seth Godin's book, The Practice?
Oh, yeah. I have so many Seth Godin books.
Good.
He's the GOAT. Like, he's just such an incredible, just everything he writes about. What I love about his work, too, is that it's very, you know, he's kind of known as more in like the marketing world. So he's like a marketer. He's a writer. But the way that he talks about leadership, one of his latest books that he wrote, The Song of Significance.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
I feel, Joe, you're awesome. You're an avid reader too. His work really made an impact on me, especially early on in my career because he focused so much on everyone should have a blog, cause a ruckus, get out there and do your work. I really appreciate him as, you know, who else is a really phenomenal author and I love his trilogy is Austin Kleon.
He's so good.
Feel Like an Artist is one of my favorite books as well. I mean, that book. And did you read The Creative Act by Rick Rubin?
It's so good. Yeah, I listened to it on Audible, man. He is out there, but man, he's on the money. He's like the Beastie Boys, Jay-Z.
He's
got the beard, like the ZZ Top beard. He looks like he's Castaway. Looks like Tom Hanks on Castaway.
Yes, that's so true. And he drops totally does.
Creative wisdom. Who did he just interview? He interviewed Steve Pressfield. I have it queued up on my podcast. And I'm like, those two creative minds. I just saw it come over my podcast reader. That's something I'm looking forward to listening to. Godin has a way of getting under your skin and making you take action in a way that you didn't think you'd have the courage to do. Like, he just keeps saying stuff and is, wow, I should be doing that. I should be doing that. And at a point, like, he says it enough, you're like, I got to do this. He makes you take that next step. Like, it's really cool.
Yeah.
How about this? As you look out to the year ahead, what's the most exciting project you're working on now?
I have our podcast for Floyd Coaching, which is called Lead with Culture. So developing and growing that show and being able to talk to really wonderful leaders who are out there who really care about their people. I'm really excited about that. I also started another show on our locally in our community to feature the downtown businesses. And so I'm really excited about that. That's just another kind of creative outlet that I get to use. And growing Floyd Coaching, just creativity lives inside of business as well. And so being able to be creative and being able to grow a business is really exciting.
That is great. Good luck with all that. A couple fun wrap-up questions to close us out. How about this, Kate? If you could have everyone listening take just one lesson away from everything we discussed, what would that lesson be?
I would probably just remind people that they are the artist of their life and they have the power to create something remarkable.
You are the artist of your life and you have the power to create something remarkable. That's awesome. How about this? Two last questions. Kate, if you could spend the day with anyone, alive or dead, famous or not famous, who would you spend the day with?
Okay. Joe, I'm like not answering your questions because I keep on giving you too many answers. But here was my, here's my initial, is if someone asks me something like that, my initial response is always Jesus.
Okay.
Like it would be amazing to spend the day for so many reasons.
Yeah.
But then I thought,
what would you do with Jesus? Right. Okay. Spend the day with him.
Oh, I'd spend it. Are you joking? Like, I want to know all the things. Like, what happened? Like, tell us it. Like, tell us everything. Like, what are we, like, what are we here for? Like,
you know what I'm doing? This is so not like whole. I'm walking on water. I'm like, all right, we're going out to a lake and we're walking on water. I want to see what that's like. Let's go. That's the first thing you guys are doing.
Well, I think, how about Jesus? But then I want to go on a private jet with Richard Branson and Sarah Blakely and Jesus. How about that? We'll go. You can come with us, Joe.
I'm in. I'll be the foursome. That is perfect. Oh my God. That would be cool. Branson, Jesus, you and Blakely, Sarah Blakely.
And Sarah Blakely. Can you imagine?
Yeah, I might need Jesse Isler too, her husband, to come along.
Oh yeah, he can come with us.
He's a character. That's awesome. I'm very good. Thanks for sharing that. How about last question? Kate Volman, if you had to get a quote or a saying tattooed on your body, what would that quote or motto say?
Oh my gosh. There's all these like finite things, Joe. It's so funny. You push us into giving you these one-liners. First of all, I don't know that I would actually do that. Like Ryan Holiday, you know how
I'd be booked. I'd be books on the arm. Yep. Yeah.
I have a friend that gets I feel like he sends me a new photo every weekend where he's getting new tattoos. I'm like, calm down with the tattoos over there. But I hear they're addicting. I would probably say, keep creating.
Keep creating. That is awesome. Yep. Keep creating. I think that is about as good as a spot as any to wrap this up. Kate Volman, I'd like to thank you for joining us. Thank you for writing this book, Do What You Love. So good. Kate, if people are looking for you and what you do online and your book, where can we find you?
The easiest way to find me would just be to go to katevolman.com. Like everyone, I feel like it's so easy to find people these days. I'm all over social media. LinkedIn and YouTube are my primary places where I spend the most time. And so would love to connect with anyone who's interested in connecting with me. And Joe, I just want to say thank you so much for inviting me on the show. I appreciate you sharing your stories because you are living the book that I wrote, which I love. Like you're doing all the things that you love and you're such a curious person. Thank you for your podcast and for starting it and for continuing it. You've had some really remarkable guests on and you have been so much fun to talk to. So I'm just so grateful for you and all of your work. So you, I know I don't need to tell you, but keep creating.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Hey, thank you so much. That means a lot coming from you. I appreciate that. And it was great to have you and wish you nothing but success. Hope to keep in touch.
Absolutely. Thanks, Joe. Day.